Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. For more than four decades, Metro has played a role in how the Tri-County area grows and plans for the future. Its work crosses city and county lines, making decisions that affect communities across our area. Now, back in June, Metro Council President Juan Carlos Gonzalez told our Blair Best he wanted to get the region back on track. And a few months later, we are checking back in with him. Gonzalez was first elected to the Metro Council in 2018, becoming the first Latino and youngest person to serve on the council. This past May, voters elected him council president, and less than a month later, he was appointed to fill out the remainder of the former president's term. He's a lifelong Oregonian and the proud son of immigrants and says he is a tireless advocate for communities across the region. Metro Council President Juan Carlos Gonzalez, thanks a lot for joining us on Straight Talk.
Thank you. Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Well, we want to hear more about, you know, we did lay out the history, the youngest ever to be elected to serve on Metro Council, the first Latino, which is terrific, and now Metro Council President. What more should we know about you and what drives you?
Yeah, well, thanks. I live in Beaverton with my wife. I'm a new dad. I have a one-year-old baby girl. She just started walking. Wow. And I see the world is opening up for her. And I think that I think about that every single day that I'm leading Metro and leading the region, thinking about the conditions that I want her to succeed in and thrive in as she grows up. And this remains a place of opportunity and possibility.
Wow. And you started this career with Metro as quite a young man. I mean, how did you know you wanted to get into that at that point in your life?
Well, once I graduated from university, I got an economics degree at Georgetown in the East Coast. I immediately knew when that wrapped up that I wanted to come back to Oregon and work with communities. So I started working at a nonprofit in Washington County, focused on education and workforce development, small business, really helping communities fulfill their potential. And from there, I just continued to find myself in spaces of advocacy, spaces of influencing policy, shaping policy. Before I knew it, the community asked me to run for office, and the rest is history.
Wow. So Metro is unique. It's the only directly elected regional government in the country.
Yeah.
Yet a lot of people are like, what's Metro? So tell us, what is Metro and why is it an important entity? A lot of people think, well, why do we have this other layer of government?
Yeah, of course. Well, every major city in America has an organization like Metro. But like you mentioned, we're the only directly elected regional government in the country. We do everything from land use, transportation planning, housing, homeless services. We manage the region's garbage and recycling systems, venues like the convention center and the Oregon Zoo. So tourism is a very important thing if we do.
Sure.
But what I like to tell folks is, in the most basic sense, we work on issues that cities and counties can't work on, or problems that cities and counties can't solve alone. So we really bring a significant amount of intention and capacity to solving big problems in our area.
Okay. You did an interview with our Blair Best. It was back in early June, I think, laying out your priorities. We're going to get into those.
Yeah.
But something you said struck me.
Yeah.
You said the most important thing you need to work on with Metro is reorienting the culture of the agency. What does that mean? And what about the culture needs fixing? And how do you want to transform it?
Yeah, well, this is a question I spend a lot of time thinking about. And one that I definitely spoke with thousands of Oregonians on the campaign trail. I think Metro, in its purest form, and when it was created almost 40 years ago, was an entity created to manage growth in the region. I think a lot of us can acknowledge there's not a lot of growth to manage right now.
Right.
So that for us means developing new muscles to create opportunity for our small businesses to thrive, for people to be able to afford to buy homes, to not just have a high quality of life, but to have clear opportunities, a clear value proposition for what it means to be an Oregonian and what it means to raise a family or retire in Greater Portland. I think those are fundamental questions that we need to throw everything at.
Yeah, there's no doubt we are living in challenging times. And you said you want to get things back on track, as we mentioned. In that same statement with Blair, you talked about making sure people have good paying jobs and that small businesses have the opportunities to thrive. I think you said the opportunities to take risks even. How does Metro help make that happen?
Well, absolutely. I think when we see an economy, there are multiple conditions that support living wage opportunities. I think that housing affordability is one of the most important things that impacts not just employers and their ability to recruit people to the region, mm-hmm. but also the ability for folks to plant roots and to build wealth over time, I think, is an important thing. We also make sure that we protect the critical assets and resources that make this one of the most beautiful places to live in the world. And I think certainly the best place to live in North America. That means our rivers and our natural areas, our parks. What really...
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. I've never sneezed on Straight Talk
it's
before.
All good.
Go ahead.
I think people love nature here, and it's making sure we protect what we love and then strengthening where our gaps and our weaknesses are. And I think that's the value of a regional government when we think about that. And certainly, I think that, like I said earlier, this region needs to be thinking much more concretely about growth and about creating opportunities for people. And that's one that's my top priority as the Metro Council president.
And growth that people can afford as well. So let's talk about housing. You're proud of your work there. In fact, you campaigned on delivering more than 5,000 affordable housing units ahead of schedule and under budget. The Metro report out just over a month ago backs that up, and at the same time points out challenges.
Yeah.
But it's also true that we're still way behind regional goals for affordable housing, and Portland is frankly especially bad. How do we make enough progress to really truly get to where we need to be?
Yeah, well, thank you for highlighting the Metro Affordable Housing Bond.
Right.
I think what was very special about the housing bond, which was passed in 2018, was ahead of its time. It had a special focus on deep affordability. So for a one-bedroom apartment, someone could get a home for $500 to $700, something that is very, very hard to find in this market.
Sure is.
But also a focus on affordable homes for families. So that's two-unit homes, three-unit homes, four-unit homes. And that is what the Metro Affordable Housing Bond has really excelled at. And as we're seeing different headlines about affordable housing having huge vacancies, Metro Affordable Housing projects have 95% occupancy or more. And so we're seeing incredible success in how that's hitting a need. And at the same time, I think we recognize there's a significant gap in affordability of what people need. I see that through a lens of multiple policy solutions. I think we need to really prioritize the production of housing at every income point in every single neighborhood. I think it's something that's so important that we live up to our values and we not just want to welcome neighbors, but create opportunities for neighbors to live next to us. And then tools like the Metro Affordable Housing Bond are essential. Our current housing bond is almost fully allocated. And as we continue to see affordability be a huge priority, we need to think about that and ask voters how they want us to lean into the future. I think that potential revenue in the future is important. Also working with the state to make sure that we're continuing to invest in housing that Oregonians can afford is something that's so important to me. And I also want to make sure that home ownership continues to be possible for people, because so many folks, especially my parents who are immigrants from Mexico, they wanted to own a home so that our family had a stable footing. I think every single family in Oregon deserves that chance. And right now that opportunity is getting farther and farther away from people. That's a policy decision, and I think it's one that we don't necessarily need to accept, and we can move forward in a different way.
Yeah, it is great to do news reports about new housing, affordable housing opening, homes, rental, et cetera. But so much more. What policy needs to change then to make it even escalate even further and get more housing built?
Well, absolutely. I think right now what we have is a funding issue as well. We need to have additional resources directed at that. And I think all of us at city, county, metro, and state level need to continue to prioritize that. One of the biggest challenges that we're seeing is that the Trump administration continues to eviscerate and gut dollars to affordable housing, to healthcare, to the basic safety net that so many Oregonians rely on. And so we're trying to fix problems that have taken generations to make while we're also losing tools and resources from partners that should be helping us solve these problems. So I'm definitely someone that's looking at public-private solutions, that's looking at getting all of us pointed in the same direction and creating a North Star that makes us feel like and reminds us that as Oregonians, we can not just fix big problems, but tackle big problems and make big things happen.
Thanks for that. It's such an important issue. I'm glad we spent that much time on it. We're going to talk about in terms of homelessness, the first step for a lot of people, getting people off the street under the Metro Supportive Housing Services Tax. on high income earners and some businesses as well. What's your take on success there? Because it seems that public confidence is a little more shaky when it comes to that. It's really hard to see, you know, so many people still in sad situations on our streets.
Yeah, I think with our homeless services response, multiple things can be true. We've housed tens of thousands of people. We've helped multiple people exit chronic homelessness. We've helped thousands of people address their addiction and their behavioral health issues. And at the same time, there is so much work that still needs to be done. I think our state needs to step up in addiction and behavioral health recovery services, which is one of the biggest gaps that we see for states that have the kind of crises that we have. I think we also need to make sure that we continue to value tools and resources like supportive housing services. That measure was passed in 2020 by voters to support homelessness.
Yep.
And when folks see a continued rise in homelessness in the greater Portland area, I think all of us understand the basic math. You know, someone that is working full-time minimum wage takes home about $2,900 before taxes. The average rent in the region right now is $1,500. I mean, you do the math.
Right.
For so many people, it's becoming harder and harder to not just thrive in the region, but survive and to stay in the region. That is a fundamental question about an economy that is broken that we can address by, one, creating living wage opportunities. So I think that we need to, one, care about the economy. Mm-hmm. The best antidote to affordability is workforce and strong business development. And again, creating opportunities for people to have agency and to find solutions for themselves. But we also have a responsibility to take care of people. Yep. And we need to make sure that we protect the resources to do that. So my job is to restore public trust, to show people that our programs can work, will work, and that we also have the political will to implement reforms that people are asking us for.
In terms of the supportive housing tax, we talk about accountability there. It expires at the end of 2030. Yep. I think voters will need to renew it if they want to. Do you support it as it stands exactly right now, or would you only support it with changes?
Yeah, I think what I want to see is a supportive housing system that learns from all of the good things that we've done and also corrects where we've gotten it wrong. So I think going back to voters and say, let's keep doing what we have been doing is the wrong approach.
Yeah.
I'm going to work with every single mayor in the region, every single county commissioner, county chair, every single business leader in the region to make sure that the measure that we do propose to voters does that, that it learns from our missed opportunities, that it builds on the success that we've had, but ultimately continues to deliver a fundamental, essential resource that this region needs.
You said that the regional business climate isn't trending in the right direction. What specifically worries you? Are you concerned that Metro can be part of the problem? Do we have to reckon with this cumulative effect of the taxes, local and regional and state?
Yeah, I definitely think that our business climate is a challenge right now. And I think that right now in our politics, too often, business is a dirty word. I think that our local businesses are a fundamental part of our long-term prosperity, of our health. It's what creates activity and opportunity and possibility, which is something that I keep talking about over and over again. I am someone of the belief that our local governments need to have the ability to reform and change and improve themselves. I often think that if we are the cause of red tape, then we need to tackle that aggressively and to create more certainty and to make sure that we are also continuing to invest in what the voters expect us to, because I believe that local government has a very important role to play and that we need to do that role well. And part of that role to me is also supporting a strong local economy. So what you can expect from the Metro Council and from Metro is continuing to pursue practical solutions that help our local businesses grow and thrive. And I want to see a strong Oregon business economy.
All right. We're less than about a minute and a half left. So I want to ask you another thing here before we go. You're 33 years old and conceivably you'll be around in the future. There's the Future 50 Project. What do you hope to envision there, and what will we look like in 50 years from now?
Yeah, well, the Future Vision Project is mandated in our charter to create a 50-year vision for the greater Portland area. The last time that the region worked on that was in 1995. So just imagine all the things that have changed since then.
Yeah.
Right now, we're asking people, What are the values that we want this region to continue to grow in over the next 50 years? What do you love about the region now? And what do you want to still be the same in 50 years? Yeah. And what are the things that we should aspire to? I think right now, again, so much of our politics, what we're struggling with is that we need leaders that help communicate a North Star of where we're going so that we can shape our policy, our investment, and our businesses feel bought into that vision. Future 50 is an incredible opportunity for everyday Oregonians to contribute to the future of the region. So you can go to oregonmetro.gov/futurevision, and we'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, have a voice for sure. Juan Carlos Gonzalez, Metro Council President. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Yeah, muchas gracias. Thank you.
Muchas gracias. All right, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, a KGW investigation exposes how an Oregon treatment center flew in Native Americans from other parts of the country only to discharge some of them onto Portland streets. Stay with us for that important story. Welcome back. A new KGW investigation exposes how people from the Midwest end up homeless in Portland. A treatment center found dumping Native American patients on Portland streets. Investigative reporter Evan Watson reveals a hidden system that's operated in Portland for years through the eyes of a woman who lived it.
A bus stop on Savi Island.
How do I use this? What do I do? Where do I go? Where am I going with it?
Was Geraldine Grassrope's last stop before she was sent off to the streets of Portland.
You know, I'm just being put out there where I didn't know nobody. It's like I wasn't given a chance.
For years, an Oregon addiction treatment center called Medicine Wheel took in Native Americans from around the country seeking help.
It paints a pretty disturbing picture.
If they didn't finish a year-long program, Medicine Wheel refused to help them get back home.
Portland was being used as a dumping ground.
How did this happen?
It's an alarming number of, like, natives that need care.
And how was it hidden for so many years?
It's like they were used to that. They've done it many times or something for them to treat me like that, like it was nothing.
Jackson Paul worked for Portland Solutions, a city program tackling homelessness. He analyzed data from the city's reunification program, an effort to reconnect homeless people with their families and hometowns. Seattle topped the list as the place where most people came from.
And then tied for second place jumps out as Bismarck, North Dakota.
And that was stunning to you.
Absolutely unexpected, to say the least.
Emails, notes, and other public records show Paul's quest for answers. He contacted other city leaders. No one knew why so many people from North Dakota and South Dakota were ending up on Portland's streets. Paul's search eventually led him to Medicine Wheel Recovery Services, a treatment center in St. Helens, Oregon, about 40 minutes north of Portland. Medicine Wheel offers a year-long addiction and mental health treatment program for indigenous people, often flying them in from the Midwest and the Great Plains Tribal Network. But when patients left the program early, they didn't go back to the Midwest. They were given a bus ticket to Portland, where many ended up homeless.
This was what they shared with me. Your ticket home was contingent upon you completing the program. And they said they didn't have the funds in order to send everybody home who was leaving the program for any number of reasons. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned.
2 months earlier, Geraldine Grassrope was one of those people. She's a grandmother from a tribal community in rural South Dakota. Last year, she decided she needed help. A way out from a family environment of alcohol and drug use.
I couldn't do it anymore, so I chose to leave.
She found Medicine Wheel, liking that it was designed for indigenous people like her. Geraldine says the nonprofit paid to fly her out to Oregon for treatment. But shortly after arriving, something felt off.
And I said, this wasn't right for me. I said, I didn't feel right. I didn't feel like the treatment placing was right for me.
Geraldine says she told staff members. About a week or so later, they drove her to a bus stop and gave her a ticket.
He said, this is where it ends for us. He said, we can't help anymore. And I wish you good luck. He shook my hand, gave me that bus pass and said, the bus will pull up over there. They jumped in a car and left me.
Geraldine was 1,400 miles away from home.
I used to think I felt hopeless, but I said, this time around, I actually felt hopeless and helpless.
Unsure where to go, she didn't know anyone.
I was mad. I was scared. Nobody. I've never been in a cities like that.
Geralyn eventually found her way to a Multnomah County Resource Center and then to Cielo Treatment Center, where she started a new program.
I didn't know what to do because I said there was a reason why I came out here, was to get alcohol treatment. And I said, I don't want to go home not being able to finish that, you know?
Now she's back home in South Dakota.
I'm going on 10 months clean and sober.
Amazed that she ever left a treatment center homeless.
I wish I had known that before I had went up there, that they didn't offer that if it didn't work out for me, you know?
When Paul uncovered Medicine Wheel's one-way bus ticket system, his first response was to offer help.
Let's make sure that when someone gets to Portland, that they're connected and their response is fantastic. This is great because we are going to continue doing this.
Then he told Mayor Keith Wilson.
We found this one organization was dumping 1 to 5 people a month for the last 7 years. That is absolutely heart-wrenching.
Medicine Wheel reportedly shared that number, 1 to 5 people a month, with Portland. Paul referenced it in an email back to one of the nonprofit's leaders. If it's accurate, that means the organization discharged up to 420 indigenous people to Portland streets since 2018.
For years, there were more Native American homeless people in Portland than you would expect to see.
Without question.
And you didn't know why?
No, absolutely not.
Local governments collect data on the Portland area's homeless population every year. In 2022, the point in time count reported indigenous people made up 12.9% of the homeless population, despite making up only 2.5% of Multnomah County's population. In 2025, researchers said Native American homelessness had more than doubled in 2 years, citing a 118% increase, the largest of any racial group. Portland leaders, realizing the potential scope of Medicine Wheel's discharge practices, sent the organization a cease and desist letter on January 9th.
Brought to Portland without any resources to get back home, you know, that behavior, that practice was cruel and it was costing lives. So we had to act and we had to act fast.
Paul says that legal threat caused Medicine Wheel to quickly change its tune.
The response within a couple of days was, absolutely, we won't be doing that anymore. And surprise, we actually were able to find some new grant funding. So we're gonna set some stuff aside and make sure that we're not exiting folks to the street anymore.
Medicine Wheel declined to comment on this story. We left multiple messages and showed up at their office in St. Helens, where a staff member turned us away. Public records show Paul and a Medicine Wheel supervisor emailed about their calls. The supervisor wrote she told staffers that discharging to Portland isn't a free ride or easy exit. Medicine Wheel is funded by taxpayer money. The Oregon Health Authority reports Medicine Wheel recently received a $1.6 million grant as part of the state's Behavioral Health Resource Network. So when Paul told the state what he found, the health authority started investigating. In February, a state licensing manager emailed him back, saying Medicine Wheel told OHA that it changed its policy 6 months ago, so they no longer discharge to homelessness in Portland. That means Medicine Wheel claimed it stopped providing bus tickets to Portland 2 months before Geralyn says she was stranded on Savi Island with a bus ticket in hand. The Oregon Health Authority says it is still actively investigating Medicine Wheel. Medicine Wheel gave OHA a list of people who were discharged with a bus ticket to Portland. The agency says it's working to verify that list. Portland leaders don't know how many Native Americans from Midwest tribes have ended up homeless in Portland because of Medicine Wheel.
They could be home, they could be stable, they could also be dead.
Jared Murray leads Painted Horse Recovery, a treatment center for Native Americans.
I definitely think that the number has risen and there is more Natives, and it is disproportionate.
Murray says his outreach workers see an alarming need for recovery housing.
When people have a sober recovery environment, they thrive.
City leaders say they're looking for other trends.
I can say definitively we would not know that this was happening without the reunification program and the data that we collected there.
Portland's no longer that destination if you've been using and abusing our system.
Geralyn, now holding her granddaughter, remembers an Oregon that was far from welcoming.
Traditionally, Native people in our culture, the Lakota culture, you don't do that. We help each other, regardless.
Evan Watson reporting. The Oregon Health Authority is still investigating. The hope is that this reporting could force the agency to take a closer look at the organization and practice. And of course, if Portland finds that this practice is ongoing from Medicine Wheel or any other organization, the city could follow up on a cease and desist threat and actually file a lawsuit. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us here on Straight Talk. And a reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Just download the free TV app, KGW Plus, available now.